good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is Wednesday, November the 23rd, 2016, 12:12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, coming up on 12:13. It is Thanksgiving Eve. I hope everybody is happy and getting ready for the big holiday and possibly in their kitchens today, anticipating the big Thanksgiving holiday, which kicks off the big Christmas season and holiday sales and everything that'll be going on over the next few days. Do want to let everybody know that over the next 2 hours, this is our Thanksgiving program. We're going to be joined at 1:45 by legendary actress Pat Carroll, the voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid. She also did The Danny Thomas Show. She's an Emmy Award-winning actress. She'll be along sharing Thanksgiving memories as we wrap up the program today at 1:45. And we're also going to talk with Rose Syracuse later on this hour. She is 96 years old. She is the longest serving employee in the history of Macy's department store in New York City. 73 years she was with Macy's, and the parade being 90 years old this year, I believe she saw every one of them. The first one would have happened when she was 6 years old. So we'll talk with Rose Syracuse later this hour. But kicking things off today, we're going to invite a gentleman onto the program who this week is synonymous with something very significant in the history, in our American history. Yesterday was the 53rd commemoration, I don't think we call it an anniversary, a commemoration of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. The first African-American Secret Service agent was Abraham Bolden under President John F. Kennedy. So in commemoration of the passing of President Kennedy 53 years ago yesterday, we're so happy to welcome to these microphones Abraham Bolden. Mr. Bolden, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Scott. It's good to talk to you again.
Absolutely. How has life been? I know last time we talked, you were working on some things as the Obama administration was rounding down here. How's everything going?
Well, it's going fine so far. What we're trying to do is get the president to void the case that I was convicted in 1964. Because of the injustices that I received. First, I would like to tell your audience that my voice might crack a little bit because we've had some terrific weather changes here in Chicago. It's been 70 degrees one day, and then the next day it's in the 30s, and you know, once you cross that octogenarian age, I'm 81 years old, your body can't keep up with the temperature sometimes. So, but I'm going to try to catch Rose. She'll be 96, and I'm going to try to catch her.
you got to stay in there and keep up with everything.
You got to keep up with it. Yesterday, was a very significant day in my life. It ranks right up there with the death of my wife, the death of my mother. It was a terrible incident. And in my opinion, it changed the course of history of the United States of America. And that should not have happened because we in the Secret Service had too much foreknowledge of a conspiracy to assassinate the president throughout the United States to let such a thing happen. Now, me as a new agent, I had met the president at McCormick Place here on April the 28th of 1961. Now, the Secret Service had tried to hide me on the lower level of McCormick Place. And I was standing in front of a washroom. Now, they gave a Chicago policeman my position where I should have been, upstairs at the entranceway where the president was going to enter into the auditorium part of McCormick Place. Now, just fate would have it that the first thing that the president wanted to do when he arrived at McCormick Place at 8:30 p.m. that night was to use the washroom, and there I stood. Now, the president walked up, and he stood in front of me and asked me if I was a Secret Service agent or whether or not I was one of Mayor Daley's finest, meaning one of the Chicago policemen. I answered that I was a Secret Service agent. The president looked at me and he smiled, and I never will forget that smile, because it seems to me that we made some kind of spiritual contact at that time. And after one of the other agents, I told him my name was Abraham Bolden. The president looked at me and he called me Mr. Bolden. He said, "Mr. Bolden, has there ever been a Negro on the White House detail assigned to Washington, D.C.?" And I told him, "No, I don't think so, Mr. President." And the president looked me in the eyes and he smiled and said, "Would you like to be the first?" I said, "Yes, sir, Mr. President." I was just elated. I couldn't believe it. It was like a dream. Here is this young senator from Massachusetts who had obtained the position of President of the United States, and he was inviting me to become a historical figure. I accepted. I couldn't wait to get home that night. As I came in and parked my car in the garage, I met the wife at the door. She was standing in the kitchen, and I told her that I had met President Kennedy. And she I tell you exactly what she said. She said, "You lying?" I said, "No, I shook his hand." She said, "Oh, Abe, come on." And I say, "He invited me to Washington, D.C., and she just couldn't believe what I was saying. You know, it was such a coincidence. It was such a coincidence, but it was my destiny to meet the president. Now, when I joined the Secret Service, I envisioned myself as using the Secret Service as a stepping stone to possibly go into the FBI, and from there to go into the diplomatic services for the United States. That was my aim, and that was my goal at that particular time. But I also had a dual purpose in life. I wanted to find out, to get some knowledge to help the people, to help humanity, to solve some of the problems that were going on. Now, in the 1960s, it was a very rough time. As a matter of fact, it was comparable to today's time. Same things were happening in the 60s that are happening today. Since the election of President-elect Trump, we had the riots and the racial ignorance among the people. There was fighting, there were the riots, and there were the killings. As a matter of fact, in the 60s, we had a lot of assassinations based upon race. President Kennedy came out strong for equality and justice for all people. But there were a faction in America that didn't want that to happen, and they were mostly Southerners, as you have it today. Now, we became a divided America, and President Kennedy, being the leader that he was, with his brother Robert Kennedy, was strongly on the side of justice and peace and coexistence. It wasn't his idea, according to my understanding, to give anybody an advantage, but he established programs and gave executive orders from the White House that would serve to increase the justice and the job that could be held by African Americans at that time. Now, there were many people around him. I found out when I became the first African American Secret Service agent on June the 6th of 1961, that there were many agents that were surrounding the president that disagreed with the president. They had taken it on a personal basis. There were some Southerners who complained about the president being an N-word lover. They didn't like him because he was a Catholic. There were some that didn't like him because of many reasons, they said, because of his connection with Cuba and different things like that. And as a result of this enmity against President Kennedy, there was always these undercurrents of the threat of assassination. Now, he was no different from any other president. Other presidents had received threats of assassination, but these threats were so organized. It was one of the most organized threats since they tried to assassinate President Truman at Blair House. Now, President Truman happened to be at Blair House because they were doing some repairs at the White House at the time, and there were a couple of Cubans that came to the Blair House and tried to assassinate President Truman. Now, President Kennedy, as a matter of fact, was one of the most, I would say, endangered presidents in the history of America. I think that he would rank along with President Obama, our present president, who saw an increase in 400% of the threats against the president when he took office. So here I am, a new agent in Washington, D.C., and I traveled with the president to Hyannisport, Massachusetts. But I was the victim of a lot of racial hates. They called me different names, Bozo, and the N-word, and they would tell different jokes in front of my presence. And it just became unbearable. Now, when I went to Hyannisport, Massachusetts with the president, I had a conversation with the president and his brother, Robert Kennedy. I didn't broach the subject because at that time I thought that it would be unofficial for me. It would not have been right for me to bring the attention of the president without going through the proper channels of the conduct of the Secret Service agents who were around him. Now, this conduct was detrimental to the protection of the president. These agents were drinking. We had whiskey in the refrigerator. We had beer. There were two cases of beer we bought on the first date. And while we were in Hyannisport, and some of the agents had whiskey balls in the little satchel that they carried around on the grounds President Kennedy's compound. And the drinking was just so bad and the agent's conduct was so deficient that on July the 6th, when I went before the chief of the United States Secret Service, U.E. Bauman, I went into the office of the chief of the United States Secret Service and told the chief point blank that President Kennedy was not being properly protected, and that I had overheard a conversation between the agents who were assigned to protect the President of the United States of America, wherein they were deciding whether or not they would give their life for the president of the President of the United States. In other words, they were had a conversation upon whether or not they would carry out their responsibilities as given to them by the Congress of the United States. Now, it was apparent to me that some of the agents surrounding the president had lost focus. They were protecting the man instead of the Constitution of the United States, which gives the power over the United States jurisdiction to the presidency of the United States and not to the man. The man is immaterial. It was the presidency of the United States that we were protecting and not a specific individual. And that's the way I saw it, and that's the way I explained it to the agents when I discussed it with them. I said that you people are talking about a president, but it's bigger than President Kennedy. The riots that are going on in the South is bigger than President Kennedy. Now, in the meantime, all through 1961, we're getting these organized threats against the president, highly organized. Cuban organizations were plotting against the president. There were other organizations, right-wing organizations, who were plotting against the president. There was a plot in Miami, Florida, whereby we intercepted a telephone conversation between one of the persons who wanted to assassinate President Kennedy, wherein he explained to one of our informants that President Kennedy was about to be killed and that the method that they would use to kill the president would be put a rifleman in a high-story building, multi-story building, and kill the president from there. The informant asked the person on the other end, whose name was Miltier, who had a reputation of being associated with the Ku Klux Klan, well, how do you expect to get away with that? And Miltier answered, we got a patsy all set up. Now, it also happened that we had the same type of conspiracy going in Chicago. A landlady discovered in one of the rooming houses there were several rifles with telescopic sights. And this was in 1963. And they were in a room that had been reserved for two Cubans, and they were being visited by two European gentlemen. Now, this was in November of 1963, several days before the president was assassinated. Prior to that time, we had received, through the FBI, information from a person who would only give his name as Lee, that there was a conspiracy to assassinate the President of the United States, and he was trying to alert the FBI and the Secret Service. Now, this person was never interviewed by the Secret Service, and he was just brushed off as being a nut. But due to that information, the trip to Chicago was canceled. It was a trip scheduled for November the 2nd of 1963. It was to highlight the competition between the Army and Air Force game at Soldier Field, football game at Soldier Field, and that's an annual event. So the trip was called off due to the fact that the Secret Service here in Chicago, they muffled the investigation by letting the criminals or the persons who were suspected of an attempt to assassinate the president, they let him get away due to a lack of sufficient investigation. Now, I complained throughout my time with the Secret Service from 1961 through 1963 that the president was not being properly protected. I noticed when he came to Chicago in March of 1963, the agent's conduct in Chicago was outlandish. They went down on a rush street where they had a Playboy Club here in Chicago, and the agents who were protecting the president just came into the meeting from the nightclub. We met at 7 o'clock on the morning of a March morning, and some of the agents were bleary-eyed and were smelling of alcohol. And I said at that particular time that you are not, the agents are not in any condition to protect the President of the United States. And all the time that they called me a complainer, a person that was saying things because I like President Kennedy, and I was disillusioned and a lot of things until November the 22nd of 1963, when the President of the United States was shot down and killed at 12:30 p.m. November the 22nd, 1963, in Dallas, Texas.
That being said, Mr. Bolden, 53 years later, yesterday, what do you think happened on that dark day that we still all remember to this day, the last time, thank goodness, a president was assassinated? What happened?
Well, in my opinion, the conspiracy was so profound. There were many incidences that happened, such as the president being allowed to ride down the street in an open limousine when the Secret Service had information that the president would probably be assassinated by someone in a tall building using a rifle. I understand that lately that some of the agents have been trying to blame Robert Kennedy for the open-top automobile, saying that the president needed to be seen. But not understanding when I was an agent in the United States Secret Service, I understood that one of the agents on the detail, a high agent on the detail, recommended that the president ride in an open limousine, and that the protection of the president while he was in Dallas, Texas, was less than that of any other president would have received under the same circumstance. In other words, the agents did not ride on the running boards as they were required. They were not observant of the tall buildings. They did not check out the sewers or nail the sewers down along the route of the president. All of these things would normally have taken place, but they did not take place when the president was in Dallas, Texas on November the 22nd. And to, you might say, wrap up the whole thing about the assassination, the president's body, it seems to me, was mishandled. The agents came through Chicago. One of the agents came through Chicago who had been in Dallas for an assassination attempt. And I heard this agent right outside my office said, "The bastard deserved what he got." And this was an agent of the Secret Service. So now, after the president was assassinated, I noticed that the reports of the Chicago incidents were being gathered together and redictated, retyped, and restructured. And at that time, President Johnson had appointed the Warren Commission to look into the assassination to find out who and why the president was assassinated. Now, the Warren Commission was supposed to be neutral. They were looking into it, according to President Johnson, and were to report back to the public as to what indeed happened in Texas. Now, I did not know at the time that Kazenbach, who was the Attorney General of the United States in place of Robert Kennedy, who was in mourning for the assassination, on December the 6th, had written a letter to Bill Moyers, who was one of the President Johnson's confidants, that Lee Harvey Oswald had to be designated as the only assassin of President Kennedy. Now, I noticed in the Chicago office how that investigation that pointed to other assassins of the president and people who had knowledge that the president was going to be assassinated, these investigations were being obstructed and denied and changed to indicate that the threats against President Kennedy were threats against President Johnson. And I heard the changes of the reports that were being dictated. I want the public to understand that we had in Chicago a live threat against the president that was interrupted by another government organization who identified our informant who was on the inside of the organization who was planning to assassinate the president. The man's name was Escherrera. These reports never got to the Warren Commission. Escherrera was never interviewed. 2 days before the assassination, Escherrera said that the president was about to be assassinated. That's a matter of record. These records never got to the public. How he knew and how that Miltier and Escherrera were saying the same thing about the assassination of a president of the United States never came before the public. Now, that leads me to believe that Lee Harvey Oswald was set up as a fall guy. He was set up. And that there were other professional hitmen that killed the president of the United States and changed the course of history.
That being said, if Lee Harvey Oswald was the fall guy, who put the hitman up to it? People have said Cuba. People have said Lyndon Johnson. People have said CIA. People have said mafia. Who ordered the killing of President Kennedy?
It would be difficult for me to establish that. I don't think that we've been able to establish that because the President of the United States had made threats that he was going to dismantle the CIA. He had also made threats against that the Federal Reserve was going to lose its power over our money. And that was the Cuban angle. Now, neither of those, in my opinion, there was a more international aspect to the assassination of the president, which I cannot go into now because I think it would be of such a disturbance to the American public that it might cause a collapse of the United States of America. I have my own idea on that. I've done some reading, I've done some study, and the annals of history is clear why the president had to be assassinated. And on that now, I can't reveal it right now while I'm alive because it's very sensitive.
That, and I certainly understand that, Mr. Bolden. Two quick questions here. We're just about out of time, and I thank you again for coming on. But the two quick questions are, first one, being in a high position in government as you were, what do you make of the election of President Trump, and what do you think's going to happen there?
Well, I think that the election of President Trump has its good aspects and its bad. The good is that the division in America has been revealed. And you can only solve a problem once you make that problem known. Now, it's up to the American people to decide whether or not they want to solve our problems intellectually or do they want to contribute to a confusion and a chaos. We have an opportunity to become the great again America that Trump is talking about, but he has to define what he means as great. Now, I think that he could be a very good president. I looked at his platform and what he stands for, and I think he should be given the opportunity to express himself and to govern. After all, we're supposed to be a democracy. He has been declared the winner. We have to support our president of the United States that has been elected by the people. That's what the word democracy indicates. And to do other than that would be a detriment to the American people and to the authorship of this country by Almighty God.
That being said, final question. We talked about it in the beginning. You're trying to get a pardon for your overturned conviction from President Obama. A little under 60 days now, President Obama will be out of office. Do you think it's going to happen? Does it look good? Do you feel optimistic?
Well, I feel somewhat optimistic, but I will tell everyone this. That as the scripture says, the heart of the king is in the hand of God, and he turneth it whithersoever he will. So I'm not going to be judged by President Obama. It's going to be God's decision, and I'm willing, able, and can live with whatever the decision is. However, I would like for mine to be clear. But I believe that before the public now, that they understand what happened and why. And I believe that it's in God's hands now. And all I have to do is to have the faith and the will and the love for all mankind. And everything's going to turn out all right.
Absolutely. Abraham Bolden, one of my favorite people, favorite guests. You have the most fantastic Thanksgiving, and I hope we'll talk again soon, maybe before the year is out. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thanks again, Scott, for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Abraham Bolden, we're going to take a quick break because we want to get our interview in with Rose Syracuse really quick in this hour. Sean Kraft is here. Stay tuned. We're coming right back. Don't you dare go anywhere. Lots to talk about.
It's Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, right here on WWGH Radio from 12:10 to 2 p.m. Listen to the program for guests like these. The voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid and actress Pat Carroll.
And I think villains are the most fascinating people as an actress to play. They have more edges to them. They have more color to them. Isn't that a shame that goodness isn't more fascinating, or our world would be better?
I guess.
But there is something fascinated about tacky people, mean people. They're colorful. Good people always seem to be a little bit, yucky. But bad people always have edges to them. That's why they're so wonderful to play for actors. Because you can pick all the things in life as a human being that annoy you or that you would like to do to be really rotten mean. Most people are too afraid to be rotten mean because we want people's approval so badly. And we know that being rotten mean isn't going to get us that. But, villains for actors are the best things in the world to play.
You know, Pat, that almost describes our current political situation in this country.
Doesn't it just? I never thought of that, but you're quite right.
Join me Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio. We'll take your calls, 740-383-9944. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com.
Hey, Scott Spears and Sean Kraft back with you here, 46 minutes past the hour on this Thanksgiving Eve, 2016. Don't forget Pat Carroll coming up the bottom of the next hour at 1:45, and we'll try to make a connection here with Rose Syracuse, longest-serving employee of Macy's at 73 years, 96 years old, 90th Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade tomorrow. Sean, day number three, final day. What are you thankful for?
I'm going to be thankful for all the family getting together.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and hopefully they have a safe trip.
Now, what did you make of the Abraham Bolden interview there?
You know, that
a
was
little
very,
history.
That was very interesting. Everybody thought it was Oswald that killed him, but he thinks it was set up.
If anybody has any thoughts on that, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Or if you want to tell us what you're thankful for or what maybe one of your favorite dishes is for Thanksgiving, we'd love to hear from you. 740-383-9944. And remember, the 90th Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade tomorrow. 90 years it's been around.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it this time.
I won't bet my bottom dollar on that. I don't think it'll happen.
You don't think it'll happen?
No. Oh. But we are going to take the phone call, 740-383-9944. Now, another thing interesting, Donald Trump met with the New York Times yesterday, and he has now decided that torture is a bad idea. He now does not believe in torture. He's done with that. And also, now he also thinks that he didn't believe in climate change before. He called it a hoax during the campaign, and now he says, well, he thinks there is some correlation between that and mankind. So he's just moving right along.
So all the stuff that he campaigned on, it's a wash.
Well, I don't know why, but he's not going to prosecute Hillary Clinton. He's not going to deport as many illegal immigrants as it was thought. He says there are some good things about Obamacare. He thinks there is something to climate change.
And he's building a fence.
The whole thing is changing. It's changing awful. He wasn't going to meet.
See, it wasn't so easy when he got in the office, huh?
Well, he hasn't even got there yet. He's got 60 more days before he goes into the office.
But I'm sure his people are already telling him, listen, Donald, this ain't going to happen.
But they still haven't got the Twitter away from him. He's still able to tweet his brains out.
Yeah.
Do you think he'll be able to put down the Twitter for Thanksgiving?
No, he'll tweet something, I'm sure.
Anybody have an opinion out there? 740-383-9944. We didn't get a great chance to talk about it yesterday because we did have call-ins. What do you feel about tariffs coming in from Mexico? The way we're going to make them pay for the wall is to put tariffs on the goods.
Well, I don't think the tariffs is going to work because simple fact is, like you said, they'll just raise the price of the product. So the American people will lose.
So how's he going to build the wall?
I have no clue, unless he uses his billions of dollars.
Well, is he going to put his company in a blind trust?
He's going to have to do something, right? Because, I mean, if not, then what happens? Isn't it against the law?
Well, there is a problem there. There is a conflict of interest, and they're trying to figure out exactly how they're going to work around this, and I don't know how they're going to work around it. Do you?
No, and they only have a few more days to do it.
A few more days, a few more hours, a few more moments before it all goes down the tubes.
I honestly think, my opinion, I don't think he thought he was going to win.
Well, what are we hearing now? There's some serious stories out there that there might have been voter fraud.
Really?
In voter tampering in Michigan, Wisconsin, I don't know, Pennsylvania.
So what happens then?
Really don't know.
Didn't it happen in Chicago? Dead people was...
Well, that was years ago. That was back in the Kennedy-Nixon thing. But what they're saying is that there might be evidence of voter tampering. And these are coming from legitimate sources, apparently.
So whether people do hack into the machines or something, or what?
I guess that's what they're saying, is somebody tried to do that. And now, by the way, Clinton's lead has now passed 2 million votes as they continue to count him. She beat Donald by 2 million votes overall the country.
So that means the popular vote, right?
Yeah.
But the electoral votes, they have not changed at all.
Well, here's the story on the whole thing. It says Hillary Clinton is being urged by a group of prominent computer scientists and election lawyers to call for a recount in three swing states won by Donald Trump. New York has learned the group, which includes voting rights attorney John Bonifaz and J. Alex Halderman, the director of the University of Michigan Center for Computer Security and Society, believes they found persuasive evidence that results in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania may have been manipulated or hacked. The group is so far not speaking on the record about their findings and is focused on lobbying Clinton, the Clinton term, in private. Hey, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I have a question for you, actually.
Go right ahead.
Why do you go on talking about what Trump is not going to do?
What do I go on talking about what?
This is my question. Why are you and other media outlets ignoring what's going on in North Dakota?
In North Dakota?
Yeah.
What are you speaking about in North Dakota? About the cop killings?
Or about the pipeline inside the Indian reservation?
Wait a second. One of the reasons we're not talking about that is because that's a moot point right now, because here's the problem. Nobody's going to make a decision on the pipeline. And for people who don't understand, we haven't avoided it. But they want to lay a pipeline through an ancient Indian burial ground, and people are protesting that. A matter of fact, there's going to be a protest. I'm glad you brought this up. There's going to be a protest in Marion tonight about that on the steps of City Hall between 5 and 8 p.m. The reason we're not talking about it is because they're trying to urge Obama to do something about it before he leaves office. Obama's stance is, well, I guess I could do something, but in 60 days they could just overturn it anyway. And the reason that's a problem is because the guy who wants to build the pipeline has said he's absolutely positive that Donald Trump is going to vote for it. And then we found out that Donald Trump has received $500,000 to $1 million from this guy during the campaign. So we really didn't want to talk about it because it kind of makes Donald Trump look bad. And
well, you already make him look bad by talking about him with all the stuff that you're not. I don't understand why you would sit there and wouldn't let fly with this.
Well, because what we're talking about is factual. We're talking about voter hacking, voter fraud, the popular vote. Those are things we can substantially hold on to. Do I know that Donald Trump's going to overturn it? No, I don't know that yet. The only factual information I have is that his campaign to be elected received $500,000 to $1 million from this guy who now says he is absolutely positive Donald will be perfectly fine to lay this line right through this burial ground. Now, my question to you is Donald Trump campaigned on no lobbyists? So why did he take $500,000 to $1 million from this guy?
Could I interject that with another question? Because I don't know anything about that. But what I do know is that if Energy Transfer, whatever that company is, doesn't get that pipeline built through that area by January the 1st, then their investors are going to determine whether the pipeline is actually worth going, and they pull out their funding. That's what this boils down to. Obama could stop it, and then it would probably get stopped by January the 1st. But, well, Obama being Obama, he probably doesn't even care about it anyway. But if it doesn't proceed, right now the Army Corps of Engineers has told them that they cannot continue across the river. That part has been done. But they are continuing to build pipeline.
Okay, let's play this out, because you took a shot at Obama there, and maybe it was well deserved. But let's play this out. Let's say Obama comes in today and says, hold on, you're not going to do this. I'm going to stop you. Okay, they stop. Then 60 days from now, President Trump comes in, and one of the first things he does after January 20th is says, I'm overturning what Obama did, fire up everything again, get back down there. And this is certainly a possibility, considering he's taken $500,000 to $1 million from the guy building it, and the guy has said he's absolutely positive that Donald Trump would be for this. What did that do? Postpone the inevitable for 50 days?
Well,
I think what Obama's trying to do... Well, hold
he
on.
Didn't accept $100,000 from the individual. Why is he sitting on the bench?
Because I think what Obama's trying to do is force the hand. I think he's trying to get Trump to say before he's out of there that I will not overturn this. Then he would stop it. Because if you stop it and then 58 days later they just start it again, what you postponed it for the inevitable for 58 days. But if you don't sign it and you put the onus on Trump to sign or say on the record that I will not do this by January 20th, then Obama can stop it without any worries that it will kick back in January 20th. My question to you is why doesn't Donald Trump say that? He sees all these protesters.
You know, I don't really... as far as between the two presidents are concerned, the thing that I worry about the most is what the sheriff spokesman said last night, when, especially after they put 130 people in the hospital. That's what I'm concerned myself with. I don't concern myself with a person, a faceless person that may have given Donald Trump $500,000 and didn't give Obama $500,000 or whatever.
Well, he's not a faceless person, because he's the guy who's ordering this to be done. If he hadn't ordered it to be done, or he'd rerouted this thing, we wouldn't be having this conversation and people wouldn't be in the hospital.
No, we'd be talking about some other thing of near uselessness.
But you're the one who brought this up. We'd be talking of some right,
up,
but now you're saying who can really stop this? Okay, take the presidents out of it, which you just said. Take them both out. You know somebody who can stop this totally and never have it happen again? That faceless guy you just talked about. If he says, I'm not going to do it, or I'm going to reroute it, it's done.
That same faceless individual that we're talking about, I don't know his name, I don't know what rank he holds, decided to build near an Indian reservation instead of building across the river at Bismarck, like they had originally planned, but the people in Bismarck stopped him from doing that. Now, why can't the people at the reservation stop him from doing that? Because they're fewer than the people in the capital city of Bismarck. They have more political pull in the state capital than they do in an Indian reservation. So they're going to sit there and build within a mile of an Indian reservation.
Well, I don't know. I guess you'd have to figure that out.
I mean, I guess maybe these people don't vote. So who gives a flying care about them? I mean, they don't vote in the elections, right? So, I mean, let's just go back and.
We're about to go to break, but I don't think it's so much the voters, because the people protesting in Marion will not be affected by it at all, and the people who are protesting in Marion, I'm pretty sure some of them are voters. I think the problem is it's the lobbyist again. You know, Trump's campaign was to drain the swamp, and
Let's have a hand in it, because Governor Kasich has sent 37 of our state troopers up there to provide support.
Right, that's why they're protesting. Absolutely, that's what. Yeah.
So to say that Ohio is not impacted, I mean, we have a hand in it now.
The people protest. Well, I don't remember anybody calling this program complaining when Kasich used Secret Service from Ohio for more than a year on the Ohio taxpayer dollar to fund his presidential campaign. But we sent this National Guard there for 17 days.
Basically, took $2.5 billion from the liquor fund and made the money disappear. It's what we should have been talking about. He wasn't presidential material.
Well, okay, that's
the governor.
Well, that's certainly somebody's opinion. I'm not denying that. I'm just saying I don't remember a whole lot of conversation about that then. But now we're sending 17 National Guard members away, or we're sending them away for 17 days, and people are going to protest when we had Secret Service people on Ohio's dollar following Kasich around day and night for more than a year, and I don't remember one protest about that.
You know, I'm sorry about the Secret Service or whatever, but I mean, he was a presidential candidate, and he was on the campaign trail. I mean, federal law goes.
Well,
when you
win some states, yes, you can stay on the campaign.
But we only won one.
When you only won one, and you stayed in there even after there was no possible way you could win, that was the problem.
Well, that was the problem with Kasich, wasn't it? He had political aspirations that went beyond what he could do.
I do. Hey, stay tuned. We got to do a break here, but we are coming back with more. Thank you for calling in.
Yep.
We're coming back.
Charlie, you didn't jump in. You did the wife thing there, but
he's an egotistical jerk.
What do you really think about it?
But he knows enough to make millions. I guess we can't put him down for that.
We can't put him down.
Because we don't know how much he owes.
Not have a chance. I'm sorry. At an office. Really? No, he's got a lot